Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up California, where I bring you a conservative Latino's take on some of the major and minor storylines hitting California, but that you need to be aware of. And today's a Cali Blitz type episode, where I'm going to hit you with about 9 stories that matter and why. One of those is Trump's unleashing a $1 billion bombshell on UCLA over anti-Semitism claims. They're not really claims as they've been proven, but it's about time someone called out all of this campus chaos, and UCLA is a good place to go towards. This isn't just a lawsuit, it's actually a reckoning for the less tolerance of hate. This is exposing how California's elite institutions have become breeding grounds for division rather than debate. In fact, remember, universities were once the sanctuary of free speech, open debate, and intellectual diversity. On the flip side, Daryl Issa's lawsuit has been stopped and put on hold in his battle to remove voter fraud from elections. And while it's a little older, how will defunding of NPR and PBS affect California? I'll let you know. But isn't it great that we're finally trimming the fat from taxpayer-funded media bias that's long skewed California's narrative? The truth is, California's political landscape is fracturing under progressive overreach, from the university scandal or scandals to electoral integrity fights. That said, right now is our best opportunity in decades for conservatives to begin the reclamation project of the Golden State. We've got to go from the grip of one-party rule, and now is a good time. Sure, it's going to take at least one full generation, but the real question is whether the CAGOP, that is California Republican Party, has the will to do so. Sadly, unlikely. However, we as constituents have the chance to flip the script locally in many races and even some state races. It's a long shot, but our fighting spirit demands we seize this opportunity. Before we begin, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, and Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. And while you're at it, while you're watching this, please make sure you like or hit a thumbs up on this video. So, the first story is the Trump administration demands a $1 billion settlement from UCLA over anti-Semitism allegations. So, the Trump administration has proposed a $1 billion settlement to resolve claims of campus anti-Semitism and discrimination. And all of this is tied to restoring the frozen federal funding. Now, they're demanding this not all up front. They're going to do installments, but they also want a $172 million claims fund for victims under Title VII in an exchange for unfreezing $585 million in federal grants. Now, this proposal was just sent last week. Now, what happened here is we all remember all those anti-Semitic protests, and that's what they were. They were a hate-filled, Hitler-esque style anti-Semitism. I want to say protests, but some that could have easily become riots, and some with the violence and intimidation that would have made the brown shirts of the 1930s Germany proud. So the Justice Department, they determined that UCLA violated the Equal Protection Clause and Title VI. UCLA also settled a separate $6 million lawsuit filed by the Beckett Fund over a Jew exclusion zone during anti-Israel protests. Let me say it again. They had a Jew exclusion zone. Now, what caused this to happen? Easy. You had a lot of blacks and Asian, a lot of leftists creating their own safe spaces, which was nothing but segregation. We fought a civil war to end that nonsense. And that started some years back, and now it extended now to a Jew exclusion zone. I have no love or hate for Israel, They are our strongest ally in the Middle East, and I view them no different than I would view the UK, France, etc. But I know this. In my lifetime, I've never seen so much anti-Semitism in my life than I have over the last 5, 6, 7 years. Whether you like them or not, if somebody attacked your family, if they did abhorrent things to your child, taking a baseball bat, barbed wire it, in and out of the anus, in and out of the vagina, y'all be siding with Israel. But because it hasn't happened to your kids, your family members, and you're ignoring the fact that we're Americans still held as hostages for months and months, you'd be singing a different tune. But as it is, you allow your anti-Semitism, your jealousy, your envy of a strong, proud culture to overtake your common sense. Again, I'm not a fan I'm a supporter of Israel's right, is what I'm trying to say. So when I saw this happening across the nation, I'm like, dear God, we are allowing the minority, as in numbers, to do whatever they want while condemning the majority, whether you're white, whether you're Christian, whether you're a conservative, condemning American values. And that's what that's what UCLA did. They condemned all of the above by allowing this to happen. Now, UCLA is supposedly reviewing the offer. Now, the UC president, James Milliken, he called it a misuse of tax dollars, harming the university's mission. Again, let's take a mob and let's head on to your house with your kids and your family and do some of the stuff y'all allow, that you, Milliken, allowed to do on campus and see what tune you sing. And let's be honest here. They have an endowment fund, but they're framing it as a misuse of tax dollars. No, that money will be used properly once you pay the penalty. Now, Newsom, he vowed to fight the demand, and State Senator Ben Allen criticized its potential to harm innovation and public service in the UC system. Ben Allen did not say one damn word when they were harming Jews on the campus, did he? Pathetic excuses for human beings. And I hope Newsom fights this, because he doesn't realize his presidential ambitions have been going down in flames. He may have presidential ambitions, but the reality is he's toast before his campaign starts. So look, UCLA can afford the $1 billion demand from its nearly $10 billion endowment fund rather than misusing taxpayer dollars. If the Jew exclusion zone had been a black exclusion zone or a Latino, aka brown exclusion zone, leftist groups would have demanded far more than $1 billion. They would have been rioting. Enough with the lies from the UCLA administrative leadership, Democrat Ben Allen and Governor Gavin Newsom, because you all condone anti-Semitism. You all are the ones who should be looking in the mirror. And let's not forget the evidence, 3 Jewish people connected to UCLA, a law graduate and a dad of 4 named Yitzhak Frankel, a history major sophomore named Joshua Gayom, I apologize if I mispronounce his names, and a law student named Eden Shemulian. Plus, there was a faculty member, Dr. Shamsa. They all sued the university over the Jew exclusion zone, which obviously Gavin Newsom supported, Ben Allen supported, and UCLA supported. One, and all of them, by the lack of inaction to defend their Jewish students and constituents. UCLA paid out over $6 million money for the victims. And that hints at wrong. To me personally, that proves their wrongdoing. Even though they didn't admit fault, $6 million, you know, $6 million admissions of fault. And so settlements like this usually can't be used as proof of guilt in court. But the judge's order to fix the issues and stop it from happening again could help show prior problems in future cases. So good for President Trump for forcing UCLA to come to the table and acknowledge their hate-filled anti-Semitism. Daryl Issa lawsuit targets post-election ballot counting. A SCOTUS showdown looms, but not with Issa's case. You know, so Issa sued California Secretary of State Shirley Weber, a DEI appointee, to block counting mail-in ballots received up to 7 days after Election Day, citing unfair electoral advantage. The lawsuit specifically targets ballot curing, meaning they determine the legitimacy of the ballot, and late arriving mail ballots, which Issa claims were improperly counted under California's extended deadline rules. So in July, federal judge, it was last week, I want to say, or a week and a half ago, that Judge Andrew Schopler stayed the case. Why? Because there's a pending SCOTUS review called Boast versus Illinois Board of Education. And the Supreme Court accepted that case. And that's going to test the candidate standing to challenge election rules. What they're going to determine is if a candidate has the right to challenge election rules, which I think is a no-brainer. Anybody should have the right. Now, Curtis Morrison, ISIS 2026 opponent and intervener in the case, flagged delays as inevitable amid fast-track proceedings. That's nonsense. France, who we all loathe because they are weak-willed and we've had to say their pathetic excuses of human beings, not once but twice. And no, they didn't help us as much as y'all want to say for the Revolutionary War. But he's saying these delays are inevitable. No, they're not. No, they're not. If you tighten up elections, these delays would not be happening. I should argue that California's practice undermines election integrity, which it does, and it creates unequal standards across the state, which it does. Now, Democrats are saying this is part of a broader GOP strategy to restrict mail-in voting. It's not a GOP strategy. It's a common sense. Most Americans agree with it when you explain it to them. Yeah, voting should be one day. You should only be allowed to mail-in vote for a special reason, as it used to be. And that's what ensures chain of custody and election integrity. As it stands, Democrats, every time a Republican has won since Bush, have claimed fraudulent elections. But you never hear that. It's like when Trump says it, all of a sudden it's the end of democracy. This case could become a test balloon for future challenges to state-level election laws. That's my take. Now, if the Supreme Court takes up the Pennsylvania case and they rule broadly, it will impact California's vote-by-mail infrastructure, which I hope it does. Look, the reason they want this is once the literally 90%, probably about 98% of registrar's offices where they count the votes are Democrat run. As we saw in Broward County, cheating happens. As we've seen across the country that I've documented in my Fired Up podcast, National Topics, voter fraud has been here since the dawn, since the beginning of our country. Documented voter fraud, documented elections that had fake ballots in there. Now, the pause for ISA, all that's doing is signaling that they're waiting for the constitutional clarity to come with the Boast case before they weigh the end themselves. They want to determine, okay, if it handles what you're complaining about, Daryl, there's no use for your case to go forward. If it doesn't, we'll revisit it. Look, as a formerly elected official and now a podcast host, look, I've documented voter fraud stretching from the founding to modern elections. Documented actual cases. And all that does is all those cases, more recent ones, have exposed is the structural vulnerabilities. Mail-in ballots break a chain of custody. They don't tell you there's a chain of custody, but there really isn't. There's not a true sense of a chain of custody. They just tell you a bunch of steps and they call that a chain of custody. It's not. It would never stand up in a court in a criminal case. DMV errors register non-citizens. That's a proven fact. It has happened and is likely continuing to happen. Again, especially with partisan registrars. No ID, no proof of residency systems enable ballot stacking at single addresses. There's homes there that you have a couple dozen people living in it, using it to register to vote. We have the ability and technology to cross-check that. Whoa, 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 you got 24 people living in this home? Got to send somebody out there to investigate this. So enforcement gaps allow fraud enablers to operate unchecked in California. Documented arrests since 2015. Here's just a handful. Texas, New Jersey, Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, Iowa, New Hampshire, Alabama, Pennsylvania. It's happening. ISIS case deserves a full airing, not a prejudgment via boast. California's pattern is clear. GOP leads on election night, then loses post count due to late arriving mail-in ballots. Usually squeakers. Again, this echoes the 2000 Florida recount, where fraudulent votes, once counted, became irreversible. And that's what Gore was trying to do. He didn't care whether they were right or not. Even if they would be overturned, meaning if the Republican Party challenged it, it was already in the system. Even if they win the challenge, the votes would remain. That's when Republicans in Florida realized this isn't about fairness or integrity. This is about getting the votes, good or not, into the system, because even the bad votes could not be pulled out. I don't care if we lose in a fair election. I care when we lose in fraudulent elections, and that's all we've had since mail-in ballots became as widespread and as expansive as they have become. All right, let's revisit public broadcasting hit. A public broadcasting hit. The GOP budget cuts reshape California's media landscape with NPR and PBS. So President Trump's $1.1 billion funding cut to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which NPR and PBS fall under, has happened. And so what's happening? California's 35 public media stations are now facing layoffs and programming reductions. And I'm okay with that. I'm a free market guy. Let the free market support you, not my tax dollars. So all nine California GOP House members voted in favor of this. And good. And key impacts, one, two, three. It looks like four major stations are going to be hit. One in Eureka, Mendocino, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. One's losing nearly $1 million, half of its budget. That's KEET TV. Some are minimal. The one in Mendocino, KZYX, is going to lose $175,000. And it's laid off its news director and reduced its emergency rural broadcast, which is fine because there are alternatives that actually work better. KQED out of San Francisco laid off 45 of its staff, lost 10 to early retirement, 15% staff cut, and an $8 million hit. Massive. Thank you, Lord. I love it. An LAist, obviously in LA, is eliminating 8 positions, facing nearly $2 million loss. Programs like Inland Edition and documentary funding are now at risk. I wouldn't be as harsh on my love that they're losing all this if they were at least unbiased, but they're extremely biased. They're extremely biased. Look, these cuts reinforce the American value of self-reliance, market sustainability, and anti-coercive funding. There are alternatives: emergency alerts, FEMA wireless alerts, NOAA weather radio, and commercial stations already serving the public safety. And you know, these local shows are not local shows. Most of the stations license the national news shows, the Morning Edition, PBS NewsHour. They don't produce anything local or create any unique content. Most of your rural stations license those shows out. So the money they're being given, they're paying back to the corporate office. So it's an unfair, unjust system. So in conservative rural areas, funding withdrawals helps curb left-leaning messaging creep, meaning they slowly indoctrinate you over and over. So they turn those red communities into purple. Eventually, their goal is to turn them blue. This isn't about shutting down media. It's about ending taxpayer dependence. If stations can't survive on donations, sponsorships, or ads, it signals market rejection. You can't stand on your own. You don't need my taxpayer to help you stand. You're not doing good for the community. You're indoctrinating and pushing an ideological message. And that's why we have to stay on top. Because there's a lot of Republican politicians. In this case, they all fell in line properly with what our values are. But a lot of times, they'll sit there and not do so. That's why there's shows like mine and others to make sure you're aware of what's happening. Lieutenant Governor Kunalakis exits the 2026 California Governor Racial Treasurer run. So I had an in-depth about 20-25 minute talk on Kamala Harris dropping out and who the front runners were. And Kunalakis wasn't necessarily a front runner, but she was at the top tier, but she had the money. She announced her withdrawal from the 2026 race to instead pursue the state treasurer position. She made the decision just a couple days ago, and she feels she can make the greatest impact by focusing on California and our future as treasurer. Now she's going to destroy it too. But the reason she's doing this, well, I'll get to that in a second. Well, she began discussing the pivot with political allies as early as March 2025, this past March. But she raised $9 million. That's the most money raised by any Democrat so far. And she can transfer most of that to the treasurer race. Now, the campaign hasn't really started, so take this with a grain of salt. But she was trailing Katie Porter and Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris, as we know now, has left the contest. So Big Mama Porter is the Democrat in the lead. Now, her exit doesn't shake up the field, but it does open it up for some of the other names, Javier Becerra, Tony Atkins, Antonio Villaraigosa, a.k.a. Tony Villa, Betty Yee, Tony Thurmond, and I think Thurmond. Yeah, and I'm not sure about Thurmond. I'm trying to think. I want to say he's Republican, but I can't remember. He's a non-factor. But anyway, now this is their opportunity to get the donors who are still willing to donate in the governor's race and potentially Nancy Pelosi's endorsement, as well as Barbara Boxer's, two stalwart, two big names in California politics that endorse Kunalakis. Now they can endorse somebody else. So what's my take? Kunalakis had the institutional lane. She had the legacy endorsements, the old guard donor gravity, and likely would have gotten Newsom. Again, she already had Pelosi, already had Boxer. Those big names can shape this race, and I'll bring you updates on that. However, regardless of what we conservative Californians want to believe in Steve Hilton or Chad Bianco, they've not raised anything. I think Hilton's got $1 million, maybe $2 million in the bank. Bianco has $500,000. The 2026 California governor's race will likely go to a Democrat unless we Republicans unite behind a self-funded candidate. And that's unlikely. There's nobody out there. And the Republican State Party, they're just a shell of what they were in the 80s. Truly, they're just a shell. They're in it to enrich themselves as the last two chairs, Jessica Milan Patterson and Jane Brewer. I can't remember the guy before. I can't remember his name. I'm drawing a blank. But they've made money being a chair while handing we the people exponential loss after loss after loss or losses exponentially. They destroyed the party the last two. And I don't know if Corey Rankin, who is a Trump supporter openly, can recover. And I'm not sure how much donor support she'll get. But we are rooting for her. And I say that not as opinion, but as fact. So what we need to do is we need to view this as the beginning of a ground-up rebuild. The CAGOP wants to make a difference. We should target school board races. Why? That's where the indoctrination begins. That's why we have all these young people growing up to support the Mahmouds, the Gavin Newsoms, the Porters, the Javier Becerras, because they're not taught to critically think. So we need to stop that, and you can do that with the school boards. But they put not one dime in there, so we, the people, must take that fight up. Then there's the city councils, the board of supervisors. Why? To retake financial control of the city and county purse strings. And we can't do this in the major urban areas, but we can do it in all areas around and work our way towards districts within the urban areas. We got to fight for the legislatures to take away the supermajority. That means we can stop. See, we have greater control if we can take away the supermajority. A supermajority, which is what both the Senate and the Assembly have, that means Democrats right now can pass anything they want without any opposing party position. Right now, when things are stalled, it's stalled because you have more center-left Democrats pushing back. So right now in the Senate, there's 30 Senate seats. The supermajority is 27. The Democrats hold, I want to say 29, 28. but they control, the supermajority is 27, and Democrats control that. The Assembly's 80 seats, the supermajority is 54, and I think Democrats hold 60. So we've got to sit there and win back enough seats to be able to stop the supermajority. That's step one in the legislature. Step two are city council races and board of supervisors races in purple areas where we can go in there, where Trump swayed independents and moderates, and we need to take advantage of that. Then we have to form third-party coalitions for long-term gains. Why? This is what Democrats have done. This is how we went from red to purple to deep blue. If we can't or don't do this, any effort elsewhere is just wasted because the CAGOP has a lack of capacity to do it and a lack of will. That's my take. Tell me yours. Bass recall collapses. Elite misfire becomes fundraising engine. Okay, so you haven't heard squat about it, but y'all heard all about it right after the LA wildfires. Recall Karen Bass, all going strong. Well, as has happened with the Gascon recall and the Newsom recall, we have another failed recall, this time against Karen Bass. And what did this do? It actually supercharged her campaign war chest. It created an anti-recall committee that raised nearly $1 million, $750,000 at my last count. And that was back in June, so it probably got more money. Now, they raised $250,000 came from Sea Change PAC, $200,000 Fabian Nunez. He's an ex-assembly speaker, and he's a Democratic power broker. Other donors of big names, not big names of you or me, but big names and big funders within the Democrat Party. John Crow, William Resnick, Baron Farwell, Cindy Mishkowski, Linda Resnick. These were like $15,000 to $25,000. That's big money for a mayor's race. So the recall was initiated by Nicole Shanahan in March. Now, Nicole Shanahan, her claim to fame is she's the ex of the founder, one of the founders of Google. So she's a billionaire herself because of that. Yeah. So, and I'm not saying that in a good or bad way. I don't know what her actual resume is. In politics, it's slim to none. And she learned the hard way. You can't just put money out there or put your name out there, which is what she did more than money. And it was abandoned in June. And they came back saying we're rebranding to our 2026 accountability elections. No, this rebranding is just a lie. We failed. We got to save face, so we're going to say we're rebranding towards 2026 accountability elections. They failed. Technically, they failed because they could not, because it was incomplete paperwork. No signature gatherings were initiated. It's already expired. And even back in June, the social media, they were confirming a strategic pivot. So why did it fail? Paperwork costs and elitism. $4 million signature target. That's the ballot qualification hurdles. And there was dwindling support from day one. They peaked after a couple of days of announcing it. So let me repeat that. $4 million is what the target cost was going to be. Then there were the ballot qualification hurdles. And then they had dwindling support the longer it took. And they weren't able to keep this in front of the people. You know, there were allegations of racism and classism is what Democrats were using to counter the recall. And they didn't have the gumption, the spine, to push back on that. I'm a Latino. I would have easily thrown it back in their face. Hey, y'all the ones who are screwing my people over. Go bleep yourselves. Democrats struggle when somebody gets in their face back at them because they expect you to fold with the allegations of racism. There are complaints over weak social media strategy, stalled metrics, unclear progress, and no public fundraising milestones. Why? Did it fail in my opinion? There was no grassroots firepower. Look, I've warned for years, California recalls implode when elite insiders run the ops. Without any ground game experience. Now, God bless her and God rest her soul and rest in peace. Karen Roseberry was in front of the first Gascon, and they threw her out. You know, she had the contact. She was getting the people together, and they said she was bad news. She was this, she was that. And I get it. Karen could rub people the wrong way because she was a strong woman. But where did those elite Anglo-suburban rich women do? They failed miserably. Who ousted her? That was the first Gascon. Then they tried another Gascon. And they both miserably failed. Since 2009-2010, the CAGOP, the California Republican Party, has gutted its grassroots machine. Wrongly betting on tech-first optics. I've got about 10,000 words of documents, and I'm going to be talking about that, how the ground game was dismantled, how we went from deep red to purple to blue because we had no ground game, how the strategy changed to tech versus fundamental campaigning. And that started right around 2009-2010. And once the grassroots machine was gutted, there was no infrastructure to mobilize boots on the ground recall volunteers. And every cycle, you go on Sundays to the final day of the Republican Party state seminars, not seminars, but conventions, and there's always a portion of it set aside to change the rules to destroy the grassroots candidates and grassroots support at the knees. And all they've done is push the backbone of the party away. And that's why the Republican Party of California is nothing, not even a shell. It's a shell of a shell. In 2021, the Newsom recall that did succeed, that was grassroots. Until the California Republican Party hijacked the momentum by backing Kevin Faulkner, which destroyed the unity we were trying to build. Why they put in their establishment? You know, Faulkner's blocked me. I mean, he's just a white, pasty, redheaded looking stepchild who got lucky and became mayor. And that's his whole claim to fame. And God bless him. He became mayor. That's a big highlight in anybody's life. Mayor of a major city. But still, he's just a hack. When I broke down his campaign, I saw, wow, this isn't true. That isn't true. You're framing it as true. Take, for example, the homeless. Oh, I brought down the homeless by this percentage. You know what he did? He busted the homeless out of San Diego city limits. Made it somebody else's problem. That's who Kevin Faulkner was. And that's the type of Republicans we have in power. You know? So Shanahan's bass recall, like Gascon and Newsom's efforts, it lacked leadership, mobilization, and trust. So until the party rebuilds local trust, determines the knock on doors, and gets dirt under the fingernails, recalls will remain performative and not persuasive. LA's $30 tourism wage hike ignites ballot wars between unions and businesses. So this past May, the LA City Council approved a $30 minimum wage increase by 2028 for hotel and airport workers. Now this has sparked an escalating conflict between labor unions and business groups through ballot measures. Each one, I think the union groups have like four ballot measures. The business groups have one, I want to say, maybe two, but one for sure. Airlines and hotel industry groups, they filed a voter referendum shortly after May to repeal the $30 minimum wage hike. Because what they say is true. It will lead to layoffs and closures because of added health care payments exceeding $8 per hour. So here's what y'all need to learn. There's limited jobs out there when these things happen, and they're going to do layoffs. You can't just go, I quit. When you got family to feed, food to put on the table, or rent to pay, when they say you're going to have this extra responsibility, this extra responsibility, this extra responsibility. Oh, but they're going to pass on the cost to the consumer. Okay, what's that going to mean? Less tourism for California. Unite Here, Local 11, responded by submitting four ballot proposals, responding to what business were doing with their ballot proposal. So they want to include citywide elections, one of the proposals, for developing or expanding large hotels, concert halls, museums, sports facilities, convention center space, and even some 2028 Olympic venues. That's not going to go well. All that's going to do is business going to say, we're not, a corporation will go, hey, how about LA? It's not worth the bother, not worth the cost, not worth the headache. How close can we get to LA without without getting hit with that. Okay, we'll go right outside of LA. And that's what happens. The union's measure also aims to expand the $30 minimum wage to all Los Angeles workers and target companies with executive pay disparities over 100-to-1. Again, companies just won't do business in LA city limits. That's all they can do is city limits. They'll go right outside. So my point is they're going to mandate voter approval for their use of city spaces and increasing their business taxes. Now, it'll go to court and get struck down. Outside forces can't dictate, you know, what a business pays its people in terms of the CEOs who are on salary. They have no power to do that. Now, business leaders escalated this further by proposing a ballot measure to repeal the city's $800 million gross receipts tax, which funds 10% of general fund for police, fire, and essential services. This is the big lie Democrats are going to tell you. Sure, right now it funds it, but there's plenty of funding. There's billions upon billions that are going to illegals that could be funded towards our fire and police. And they won't. So this is what they're going to claim when they go out and campaign on this. Mayor Karen Bass is warning. She has no leg to stand on, and we all know it. It's a hollow take. So what's my take overall? Well, look, this is going to drive businesses to flee. Chevron, Tesla, and Oracle exiting California over high taxes, regulations, and costs. That's on a larger scale, but it's going to happen the same way on a lesser scale, within meaning businesses doing business in LA city limits. They're going to flee. Look, In-N-Out was making money in Oakland, but because of all the headaches and crime, the cost of doing business, they said, we're just out of here. It's not worth it. It's not worth having our employees in danger and customers in danger. So they just shut down and opened the store. And that's what will happen here. So I saw this as a child in Fayetteville, North Carolina, the 70s and 80s. The downtown decline became just a rough, depopulated area with bars, seedy venues. Why? Because all the stores went to the suburbs. Now, it was granted the explosion of the malls, but downtown Fayetteville was dead. And it didn't revitalize until about 15, 20 years ago. About 25 years ago, 30 years ago, they started the revitalization, but it didn't really take effect until about 15 years ago. L.A. will, and to make it worse, L.A. is going to be hit harder because now there's online shopping. Tourism is already projected to drop up to 30% in 2025. Why trade tensions and post-pandemic lags? So rather than working on what's going to be best for everybody, they're going to turn L.A. into 1970s New York City. High crime, tourism plummeting, fiscal crisis. They're already a billion in the hole. That's being conservative. And all of this is created by Democratic policies. There's going to be further hits from spiking crime. Crime is actually skyrocketing. They're trying to say crime is down, homicides are down. Now, the homicides may technically be true. But the underreporting of crimes because of, say, George Gascon's non-prosecution policies, police futility, when they arrest somebody, they get let go, and downgrading felonies and misdemeanors, that's what's going to turn L.A. into 1970s New York City. They know there's nothing, they won't get charged and won't get sent away for breaking into your car, mugging you. Or if you're Latino or black, you know, Gascon was letting he was using skin color to determine if he should prosecute. I'm Latino. I got white, black, brown in my family. If you're guilty, you're guilty. Do the time. Do the crime, do the time. LA's crime data now blends old summary reporting system with a newer NIBRS standard. And that makes it apple to oranges when you try to compare how bad it is. I believe they purposely do that. Now, they say there's a drop in shootings, LAPD does, but the property crime and retail theft is skyrocketing, especially downtown and South LA. These businesses are going to flee. Look, the fact tourism is plummeting and the fact we have a fiscal crisis is directly because of Democratic policies. California's downward spiral demands a fighting CAGOP, State Republican Party, to come in and fight this battle, to message in blue districts. Societies usually hit rock bottom before they're willing to change. here's our opportunity to push that change earlier. And I hope Roxanne Hoag, who I know her, she's worked hard. She is a black and she's mixed, black and white, Jamaican and Anglo, and she's the LA GOP chair, and she's trying to affect change. So we're rooting for her. Hopefully, she can use this to begin messaging and win over some of these districts that we don't even field candidates in. LA City faces a $1.8 million legal bill for 2 weeks in homelessness lawsuit. So Los Angeles hired an elite law firm for a critical federal hearing in the long-running homelessness case that's resulting in massive fees during a time of severe budget constraints. Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher billed the city nearly $2 million for work for 2 weeks of work. And it was for preparations in 4 of 7 trial days with at least 15 lawyers charging $1,300 per hour. So they were charging, the bottom line here is, charging the city of L.A. $140,000 daily. And the bill exceeded the initial $900,000 contract appropriation for up to 3 years, lacking prior written approval from the city attorney as required. So in other words, the bill blew past the $900,000 budget, which is meant to last for 3 years, and they didn't get the required written approval. There are going to be some lawsuits on this one. Look, LA's in a $1 billion budget shortfall. That's being conservative. They have upcoming employee layoffs, and they retained this firm. Why? Because they don't want to lose control of $1 billion in homelessness programs, which right now is nothing but a big grift to Democrat cronies that don't actually help the homeless. Attorney Matthew Umhofer, he's actively fighting the city to not do this. And he says this alleges breaches of settlement requiring the city to provide nearly 20,000 new shelter beds. In other words, they're not doing the job they're supposed to be doing as it is, but they're spending $2 billion on this. Or $2 million on this company. What's my take? This exemplifies reckless fiscal responsibility in a Democrat-run city like LA. Taxpayer dollars are squandered on exorbitant legal fees. Why? To dodge accountability for failed homelessness policies, rather than directly funding shelters or enforcement measures that could actually reduce street encampments. In other words, reduce the homelessness. Again, a $1 billion shortfall. And laying employees off. It's not only outrageous government waste, it's burdening working families with higher taxes to come. It's typical political hackery of the incompetent being elected. But sadly, that's on Los Angelinos. Umhofer is right. Endless litigation perpetuates the crisis rather than solves it. Again, I hope Roxanne Hoag can take advantage of this and help change voter minds. Because if we can't win with issues like this, then L.A. will indeed become a bleep hole, reminiscent of New York City from the 70s and 90s and San Francisco of today. And there you have it, my friends. There you have it. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I wanted to hit on some of these stories hard. There's a couple of stories I'll carry over into next week, including Nathan Fletcher, his sexual assault case being thrown out. I may do a short on that first. But that's our show, people. The Bass recall effort fizzled out spectacularly, turning an elite flop into a liberal fundraising bonanza that exposes just how entrenched the machine really is. Over in LA, the $30 minimum wage for tourism workers that sparked the ballot measure war. It's proving once again that progressive policies breed more chaos than solutions. And obviously the final story, the nearly $2 million for just 2 weeks on the homelessness case. Talk about taxpayer dollars vanishing into the abyss of endless lawsuits. Remember these stories. And when the topics of politics and who to vote for comes up, you've got to press these stories on these individuals to remember what Democrats have done. If not, cha-ching, Democrat vote come November. We know the Republican Party in California is currently incapable. So it's up to us, the people, to fight these battles. Regardless, that's how it should be anyway. Before we go, be sure to hit like or thumbs up on this podcast, and make sure, and I beg of you, share this podcast. Then bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify under the profile Grumblings Media. Until next week, my friends, this is William Del Pilar for Fired Up California. Stay vigilant and let's hope for some victories down the road.